Hello, Wade Smith.
Good morning,
hey,
fellas.
Hey, Wade. Okay, something was bothering me during the last segment that Mike said. And tell me if this sounds weird to you at first. If you were to hear Mike say, "I've never seen a clear backpack in my life," would that seem strange to you?
Yeah, especially since, I don't know, how many years now has the NFL had that little policy for, it's probably, well, saying, I know I was still playing.
Backpack. Right, but he's saying clear backpack.
Backpack.
A clear backpack?
Like on a high school student.
I mean, if you're on social media at all, maybe it's because I'm a parent and I have kids that are, you know, around that age. And so I've seen those, maybe I'm more cognizant of it than you because you're single guy, no kids, so
yeah, you're not like perusing the backpack aisle. You're not hanging out in, like, the kid, the back to school section.
But just
like
even
a
on social media, they, you know, they have all these things that are popping up. They're showing these different types of backpacks that they have, clear ones. They have ones that have bulletproof protection.
That part I hadn't heard of.
Yeah, I did not know
about that. No, I didn't know about the bulletproof part.
Yeah, if you think about it, though, if somebody came into a school and started shooting it and you had that backpack on, it protects basically all of the vital
parts. Your vital organs and everything.
Yeah. Like, the only thing that would be accessible is like your legs.
I literally have not seen one, I swear. So my comment in the previous segment was a legitimate, I have not experienced that backpack.
I'm going to go the budget route and just steal an x-ray apron from my doctor's office next week.
I like it.
Send her to school, the x-ray apron. I don't know. I feel like they've been around since like Columbine. You've seen them at various times. They were all.
I don't think I've seen
them. And now a bunch of people are pointing out that they've been in the inner city forever.
Okay.
Did you go to high school in the inner city?
Actually, I did for a little while.
Did you? What?
Yes.
How was that experience, Mike? You got to talk to me about
this. I'll tell you about that. All right. So when I first, I'm glad you brought this up.
You went to high school?
No, not high school.
Oh, all right.
Super smart.
So when we moved to the U.S., we lived in Brooklyn, Brighton Beach. A lot of Russian people out there. If you go there, you might hear only Russian for a while.
Okay.
So at first, I went to like kindergarten, first grade, and I learned to speak English, all that. Then I took this test. And it put me in this program for second and third grade, like an advanced program. But the thing is, that advanced program was not at the school that we could walk to.
Uh-huh.
They bussed us over to a different school. And this school was probably like 90-95% African American.
Uh-huh.
And so we were taken and we were in that school.
But that's at a good age where kids' parents' own issues haven't started seeping into their own attitudes and everything.
I mean, not to sound like woke or I hate that word anyway. But just like not to sound like I'm like, you know, whatever. But it, at that age, it was a good experience to be in a situation where I'm like, all right, I'm in a school where like not a lot of people look like me.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good experience to have.
Oh,
that had to have been totally like different for you because you're coming from Russia where everyone looks pretty similar, I guess, where you were growing up, and then you go to a place where it's the exact opposite. And it's, first of all, it's a new country, and then it's a new, like, totally different feel of individuals in that country. Maybe did you think that like this is what America's about? Like 95%, you know, African American.
I don't think I thought that, but like I knew, especially being in New York City, that it was a fairly diverse place.
Yeah.
So it was a good experience to have as a kid. I'll put it that way.
How long were you there?
I was at that school for I think 2 years. Then we moved to the suburbs.
Oh, really?
So
I'm surprised that you didn't like have some more soul rub off on you.
I'm a fraud.
Well, answer this, Mike. With women, are you more of a fan up top or below?
Up top, definitely.
Up top?
Yes.
So you're more of a fan of the front instead of the back.
But he spent his formative years, like his really developed, like his pubescent years, where he's really forming those things. Yeah,
I was hoping that you're gonna be like, you know, the junk in the trunk is the most important thing.
But you're saying if
you would have stayed there long enough, it would have changed your mentality on when you looked at women.
There's something that's troubling me this morning, and it is the fact that Seth Payne has totally changed his tune on someone who he has really disliked in the football media. This is a very well-known person.
It wasn't that I disliked him.
Jay Glazer.
It was a Jay Glazer. I used to have some issues with Jay Glazer. I don't know if you saw him. Oh, no, you weren't out there yesterday. Wait, Jay Glazer was there. I ended up talking to Jay Glazer for like about 10 minutes, actually. And I left it like feeling the most motivated I've felt in a long time. This guy, for those of you who don't know the Jay Glazer on Fox Sports, he breaks a lot of news. He has a lot of ties with players.
Yep.
Like, he's got very close ties and friendships with players. A lot of them work out, like, at an MMA gym that he has. And I never quite got the appeal. I get it now. I don't know if you know anybody that's buddy-buddy with Jay Glazer, Wade, but you talk to him, and he's kind of like, it's like a motivational speaker. He really, like, he kind of just made me think about things in a different way, and I was motivated to do great things.
Do you think that maybe some of your angst towards Brian Cushing might have rubbed off of why you didn't like Jay Glazer?
No, think, Mike's the one.
Mike really just disliked him. But
I'm not just loving Brian Cushing.
I don't dislike Brian Cushing the guy. I dislike Brian Cushing the getting a 10-game suspension part of Brian Cushing. Anytime we've had Brian on the show, he's always been a nice guy.
I like Brian Cushing. I see past people's faults because some people have faults that are more public than others. It was a little weird the Texans made him a captain when he came back from the suspension, I thought. But that's the Texans' issue, not Brian Cushing's issue.
That's fair.
But you see with the Jay Glazer thing, you know, sometimes you might have a preconceived notion about somebody or something that they put out to the world to see, a persona or whatever it may be. But when you actually have a conversation with somebody, it can definitely change your outlook of what type of person is, good or bad. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you come across somebody that you think is like, when you see on TV or whatever, you think this is a really cool person. You talk to him like, that dude is pretty damn lame. You know,
Television.
Right.
Usually, sometimes the people that are most likable on television are just monsters in their personal life.
Yep.
Where I could see, and I always wonder too, and this guy has nothing to do with personality. I always thought he was kind of like a chubby little dude. That dude is yoked. He's like, he looks big on TV because he's like, so bodybuilders on TV end up looking fat sometimes, even though they're just wide. That's what happens with him. He's like, lean and veiny and stuff. He's short, but he's really yoked.
When you say short, how short are we talking?
I think maybe 5'6" or 7". No,
that's short.
No, maybe 5'8". I don't know.
He's a short guy. I mean, his whole he broke in, and I think his big guy was Strahan, and that was the first guy, Michael Strahan, who obviously went to Texas Southern. The first guy he really got in tight with, and I think the circle kind of expanded. Like, people in the media business, they kind of know where different sources come from. Like, some guys are known for more like front office stuff or even training staff. But Glazer, and everybody knows this, like, he knows the players and he knows the coaches as well.
Now, here's the thing. He's 5'9". He's not actually all that short, but it's because he's so wide that it looks like he's shorter than he actually is. And he's also usually standing next to professional football players.
Yeah, and the fact that you're, what, 6'6", 6'5"?
6'4". Really, I look taller than I am.
You're taller than 6'4".
I'm taller than 6'4".
I'm 6'4", you're taller than me.
I might have grown a little bit. You know what? I should get measured. Yeah. Sometimes when guys lose weight after they're done playing, their spine decompresses a little bit and they actually get a little bit taller. Yeah.
Did not know that. One observation I want to discuss about the Texans before tomorrow night's game, and this is more big picture than relating to tomorrow night. This defense should be a top 10 defense minimum when you look at the talent that's up and down the roster. I would say, I was thinking this morning as we've been discussing some of our observations from the Texans 49ers joint practices. I'm looking at this, and my big questions would be right now, Kevin Johnson, how good is he going to be? Because the way they're lining up, they're going to be relying, from what I can tell at training camp, for Kevin Johnson to be the boundary corner or one of the outside corners. They've had Colvin lining up in the slot almost exclusively. So Kevin Johnson's going to be a big part of how high the ceiling is on the defense. And then I would say the other spot would be I guess the defensive end spot next to Reeder and Watt. But other than that, you are talking about a defense that is loaded. And I guess I should also throw in, to be fair, we like Jonathan Joseph, but he's getting up there in years. How much does he have left?
Well, I would say this. I know you mentioned the defensive end spot. Christian Covington, that first preseason game, he had a great game.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, he was the first play of the game. He was half a count away from having a sack on that first play. He got a hit on hit on the quarterback. So, you know, he's doing well. He showed himself that he could hold the point in the run game. So I wouldn't say that would even be a questionable position. I think, you know, from top to bottom, it has to do with health. It pretty much has to do with health. If those guys can stay healthy, they're going to get a bunch of sacks. I don't know what the record in Texans history is for sacks, but I think they're going to be pushing that number. And it's not because J.J. has 20-some sacks. It's going to be because J.J. has, 13, 14 sacks. But then Klein is going to have 12 sacks. And then Merciless is going to have 12 sacks. And then you got this Ejiofor kid that's coming up there that has like 7 or 8 sacks. And then you got McKinney that's going to get 4 or 5 sacks. So I just see them creating a bunch of turnovers, having a bunch of sacks with that defense. And that's going to be an opportunistic defense.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned Christian Covington too, because I think it's true. Like, I don't know how many sacks Christian Covington will have or DJ Reader or the Blackson kid or any of these guys. But even in the past, when the Texans have had some good edge rushers, there were times where the edge rushers got pushed around the pocket or it was too easy to step up into the pocket
exactly.
Because there wasn't an interior push. I think they're really poised this year to get great interior push from 3-4 defensive linemen, which is like not typical. Like Covington looks like a 3-4 defensive end. DJ Reader looks like a nose tackle, but both those guys can push the pocket really effectively.
They can push the pocket and they got wiggle.
Yeah, right,
and
right.
That's the thing. Like that when the edge is getting pressure and the quarterback steps up and he's also having to deal with the guard that just got beat off the snap as well, he has nowhere to go. And so, you know, Christian Covington and DJ Reader and what was the other name?
Angelo Blackson's Blackson, the one that's really showed up a lot. Carlos Watkins and all these guys. Yeah, Joel Heath.
Between that group of about 3 or 4 guys, they're going to end up having 12 sacks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so you add that all together and you got Matthew blitzing off of the edge. That's a bunch of sacks. I just see a bunch of sacks, and that's going to help a guy like Kevin Johnson because he's not going to have the cover as long.
We keep forgetting to bring this up when we talked about Bernardrick McKinney for a while this morning. Yep. And just how you've got three really good options at inside linebacker. Bernardrick McKinney can rush the passer too.
Yes.
And just for Romeo Crennel just has a wealth of options from week to week, game plan to game plan. How are we going to blitz these guys? How are we going to attack these guys? How are we going to line up against these guys? It's exciting because you feel like everything might be kind of getting back to right, where last year it was just such a mess defensively. This feels like it did a couple years ago.
Yeah, and I liken it to the fact that, you know, O'Brien, when he got Deshaun Watson on offense, he looked like he was just enjoying playing play calling now because he had so many different things that he can do. I think it's going to be the same thing with Crennel this year because he has so many different parts that he can use in different ways, and it's going to be fun for him to call plays, and it's going to be tough for defenses and offenses to compete with.
The stuff that they've been running in training camp has been relatively vanilla, which makes me wondering, like, I feel like all the real stuff is in the lab, that they're not showing it to, not really showing it to anybody. We'll find out week 1 against the Patriots what they have up their sleeve.